whether it be as a star linebacker for the Cincinnati Bengals or on TV as the star of Dahani Tackles the Globe on the Travel Channel. We could only be speaking of the one and only Dahani Jones. A pleasure to welcome you back to the FDH Lounge. Dahani, good to have you on.
Oh, thanks for having me. How you guys doing?
Oh, fine, thank you. As far as what you're working on right now, let's take a look at that. You've got everything underway with season two of Dahani Tackles the Globe on the Travel Channel. How's that been going with the things you've encountered this year as opposed to last year?
No, I mean, everything this season has been phenomenal. I mean, the response and just the support of the entire show from everybody, from my teammates to my fans and just people just around the world, and just their love of travel and their love of learning about different sports and learning about different cultures and countries.
It's an absolutely unique type of program because, and again, you know, the Travel Channel, of course, focuses on things that are all over the world, but you are immersing yourself into things of sports and culture and all of these different places, of course. And I know that the timing of this is no coincidence because you've got the World Cup soon to be coming to South Africa. But you went to South Africa here for some soccer. Talk about what the experience was like and how that came together for you.
Oh, the experience in South Africa is second to none. I mean, it's really an amazing place, and people really have embraced change there. You know, of course, there's been a lot of things that have gone on, and especially being the World Cup being established there and everybody gathering, you know, they've done a significant job in terms of improvements, and also the stadiums are fantastic, and the level of vuvuzelas, the big horns that they play, will increase, and I'm sure everybody will hear those as you watch television or you actually attend the World Cup.
I'd be interested in getting your sense, to the extent that you were able to when you were there, of things, socio-political down there in South Africa. I've heard some rumblings over the years, and only some vague ones at that, that when Nelson Mandela dies, that may kind of, you know, there may be some long-suppressed tensions that may erupt, that basically he's kind of helping to hold things together for right now. Have you gotten any sense of that, of any unfinished business among the populace, or is it your sense, you know, that the ongoing process of unification is proceeding in a good way?
Well, I mean, anytime there are difficult situations with any country, it's not that it happens overnight, that things become absolute, if you will. Mm-hmm. And such a man as Mandela and his words and his sacrifice and the way that he's able to embrace the community and link them together, of course, is strong. And when he passes, you know, there'll be definitely things that go on, but at the same time, I believe that the South African people are moving in the right direction. I believe that they have been, and they will continue to do so. And while I was down there, I mean, look, the Dahani Tackles the Globe centralizes sports and how that brings together a community, how that brings together a culture. And if it's at all evident through the sport of soccer, then everybody's on the right path.
Oh, good, good. Very well said. Yeah, I think there are a lot of things you can pick up from the world of sports. And, you know, that's a way where I think there's a measure of redemption for sports for, you know, as much as, you know, we may take it too seriously in our society from time to time. Yeah, it can be a good, you know, unifying force here. You've had so many other great adventures just in this season alone, to say nothing of the previous season here, whether it be Brazil with the sand volleyball, whether it be, your time in Italy with the cycling, or Croatia or Jamaica, the things you've been at. What have been some of the moments that have really kind of jumped out at you thus far in season two?
Oh, I mean, especially in being in Italy and having that pasta with Mama. That was one of the first episodes of the second season. Being in Mexico City, which is an episode you haven't seen, was really a tremendous experience. And also being in Nepal, but being in Brazil. I mean, every single country that I've ever traveled to and the people that I've met have been absolutely phenomenal. I mean, been amazing. I mean, the sense of the travel bug just sort of sticks with you, and you just always want to sort of get out of the country. And, you know, right now I'm in Cincinnati practicing, getting the up and coming season, and my focus and efforts are on football. But, you know, I'm dying to get back out of the country, but then come back and start the season the right way.
It's an amazing dual existence that you're able to live doing this, you know, and it's just so fascinating because, like I said, it's the most unique show I think that the Travel Channel's ever had because of the nature of what you're immersing yourself in. on a regular basis here. And when you look at that, when you're going to the different cultures, I'm wondering, because sometimes things will kind of take on a life of their own as a series will go along. Is there a notion where of season two, of where as you're doing this more, have you gotten to areas where the locals may know your work coming in? In other words, season one, this was kind of a new thing, but season two, is it still kind of new to the people around you, or are you getting different places and people are like, oh, yeah, you're the guy from that show, and now you're here to do this?
No, I mean, people have definitely have received me well, and they've known about the show, so that's definitely been an encouraging thing. I mean, this, of course, this place that you go that they've never heard of it, and that's what we welcome is, you know, that's what we welcome is, because, you know, you want to go into a country and you want to go in there with a blank slate and you want to learn about the culture and the people as best you possibly can, and hopefully they'll be as real as possible and tell you so much, and I think that's what you get through the game, through sports, just because that's the real side, the competitive side of people. That's what really links people together.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and as far as, you know, the love of sport and the way that people take it seriously and everything, that it you know, you're showing once again just what a universal concept that is, even if it's different sports in different places. As far as TV shows go, again, this is where really, you know, the two different aspects of your experience really kind of overlapped last summer. When we had you on, it was just before the start of training camp, and you were just about to start to experience Hard Knocks there with the HBO crew in training camp, and we talked a little bit, and you kind of anticipated what that was going to be like and what that was going to be like for some of your teammates that really hadn't been used to the constant cameras before. So was that experience pretty much as you expected and as your teammates expected?
Yeah, I mean, it's very different when you have cameras around you all the time. And granted, I have a little bit of experience in that, especially being on the road. But then in training camp, it's a little bit different because you're really just trying to focus on football, not really concentrate about what else is going on. And I think what was good about last season was we were able to understand and deal with the actions, and we got it firsthand, especially coming into the season with Hard Knocks following us around. And we didn't really, we saw it, we dealt with it, we understood it, and then we moved on from it, and we recognized that, you know, to be good and to be on the top, you will be in the spotlight, and that's one of the adversities that we had to deal with, and we dealt with it well.
You know, you did, and it was interesting because that season really kind of took on a life of its own as far as some of the highs and lows and the things that happened there, and we couldn't have imagined as we sat here last year. I mean, when you were on about a day or so after the word came out about Coach Jim Johnson passing away, and that was the first thing we talked about there, and you shared some of your thoughts on that, and I'm sure at that point in time you couldn't have imagined the things yet to come during the season here, whether it be with Coach Zimmer's wife, whether it be with Chris Henry, but certainly it's interesting because the Bengals were picked to be as a part of Hard Knocks just, you know, because of some of the personalities involved and the things that made it sort of a compelling story to the HBO crew. Little would anybody know that you guys would go on to become one of the dominant stories of the season, really, for better or for worse.
No, I mean, we were really fortunate, and there's definitely some hard times that we went through, some hardships, and, you know, and we really came together as a team. I think that is one of the reasons why we bonded so well, and that was one of the reasons why we were so successful.
What are some of the things, as you see this in other countries, and I'm sure there are things that overlap in your mind as far as your experience with doing the TV show and playing sports in other countries and things that you bring back to training camp with you here. In terms of bonding through stressful situations, going through tough things together, what have you learned about that and your teammates as far as a level of adversity last year that by late last season with the blows you guys had suffered, that just, you know, it just seemed incomprehensible to those of us outside that locker room. Talk about really the transformative nature of that on that that clubhouse.
Well, I mean, you just learn about people. You learn about yourself. You learn about your teammates and how everybody functions in sort of a high-stress situation. And I think it's evident in sort of the outcome of the entire season and what we were able to accomplish, sort of the level of strength you know, mind, body, and soul that we all had as we came together, and just sort of focus our efforts on that main purpose, and that's getting to the playoffs, and you know, hopefully, when you know, winning the Super Bowl. Granted, we were stopped short, but at the same time, we were all unified underneath that premise, and I think we did a great job in terms of our effort.
You guys really did, and I remember, you know, last year, you know, you said going into training camp, you felt that this was quite possibly a playoff team, and you know, I had what was probably the conventional wisdom viewpoint at the time, where I just scratched my head and said, "Ah, oh, wow, you know, I don't really see that." But boy, you were right, and the doubters like myself were wrong. What were the things you saw about that
team?
It
happens. It's all right. I'm not going to hold it against you.
That's fine. That's, you know, I always come correct. I always admit when I'm wrong. I'm curious to know, though, from your insight, because, you know, you're obviously a very deep thinker. You're obviously somebody that's very insightful on these things. What were you seeing when you were looking at it that the outside folks like myself missed? How did you see that this was a team about to come together and accomplish that?
I think it's simple. I mean, I saw people. I saw people with a plan and a purpose. I didn't see the past. You know, I think that's what people dwell on when they think about the Cincinnati Bengals. They dwell too much on the past. They don't see the people. They don't see the purpose. They don't see the mission and the vision of the people that are in the locker room and their goals and expectations of themselves. You know, as onlookers, all you have is to sort of go back to what you saw historically, and that is not the team that we have today.
Interesting. So is it a matter of that you saw a lot of the parts that were there? When you talk about what people saw, you know, and everything like that, that not being, you know, an accurate impression, is it a notion of the outside world missing some of the day-to-day improvement, some of the things that if you're there and you're able to see it, you see guys day by day getting better? Are those the kind of things that are sometimes too subtle for the rest of us to pick up on?
Well, I mean, if you look at our record and what we were able to accomplish last year, I mean, it's quite evident in terms of our hard work. But people still look at sort of the past. They still look at, you know, the negative aspects of what the Cincinnati Bengals have had in their history, and that's not the case nowadays. We have tremendous athletes. We have tremendous people. We have a tremendous personality that links and syncs quite well together, and we're building a team, and we're unified, and we're moving towards our individual as well as team-oriented goals. So, you know, we put the past behind us. You know, I think that, you know, everybody, as they look at the Bengals, they should as well.
Well, it's really interesting, you know, when you look at it in terms of what a difference a year can make. Because you look at it now, and I looked at where you guys were at the end of the season. I think, again, probably a lot the same as the conventional wisdom of it. It seemed like one of the biggest things that was limiting you guys at the end of the year there was, you know, the diversified passing game. If you guys had, you know, a little more aside from Ocho Cinco, but then, boom, you go out and you sign Antonio Bryant, you draft Jermaine Gresham, which I thought was a home run, because it's been since forever since you guys have really had a home run hitter there at tight end. I mean, you look at it now, and I think the rest of the world, myself included, we're going, wow, it looks like, you know, the major things that were probably plaguing them at the end of the season here seem to have been addressed. So as the worm has turned, you know, 12 months later, how do the Cincinnati Bengals now deal with the world, you know, believing in them? And you don't, you know, it could never be an us against the world kind of thing anymore, because we're now believers.
No, I mean, the world's going to think whatever they want to think, whether they think we're on top or whether we think we're at the bottom. I mean, we just sort of live within our own world, and I think that's the most important thing as a team. You know, we focus on each other. We think about, okay, what do I have to do to improve the team? What do we have to do to improve the team? What can we collectively do together as a team, build a better team? And that's what we focus on. We don't really focus on the outside antics and people's rhetoric and such things like that. So, you know, we keep the Bengals family tight so that we go out there and we perform together as a unit.
Exactly. You know, very, very well said. You know, you gotta be able to tune out, you know, the bio-vations, you know, the, you know, stuff like myself and anybody else in front of a microphone. It's good that you guys can do that. You know, just focus on your own business. It's a necessity. You know, as you look at it this year, you know, again, with the way that you guys came together last year, and of course the disappointment of the playoff game at home there, but still, that game represented in and of itself an achievement that the team hadn't seen in about a good 4 years or so. As you're looking to take that next step forward now, as expectations continue to ascend here to this point, what are some thoughts that you have on, you know, the team adapting going forward? Obviously, there's been a little bit of turnover in personnel through the off season here. But as the team moves into this year, how do you see everything kind of really coming together as opposed to where you were 12 months ago?
Well, I think things are going to come together quite well. I mean, right now we're in the middle of the OTAs and everybody's lifting and getting strong and, you know, just getting excited about the season. You know, it's premature to tell you exactly what's going to happen, but, you know, everybody has a good feeling right about now, and I think we have just as good a chance as anybody else.
Very well said, and may I say, a significantly better chance than my Cleveland Browns. But that's, well,
no, Cleveland's going to do well. I think, you know, everybody's at that turning point right now, and there's a lot of things up for grabs, and I think a lot of people are going to be fighting. So Cleveland, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, I mean, Baltimore, we're the toughest division out there, so we all look forward to great success.
It really is that. It really is a bare-knuckles type of situation. Well, it's interesting too. When you look at something like the off season that Baltimore's had, you know, and they've made some strides there as well with bringing in Bolden to help their passing game, which also needed to be diversified a little bit. The picks that they made in the draft, especially the two in the second round, that just had me throwing stuff at my TV set. That how everybody let the Ravens end up with these guys. You know, how much of that, you know, is stuff that you guys pay attention to, like, you know, these guys went out, did this stuff, got better. I know clearly it doesn't intimidate you guys. You know, you continue to do what you got to do, and we've talked about the focus. Does it register to any significant degree, though, in terms of what the others are in the division are doing?
No, I mean, that's never something that we really pay attention to, because we don't have those guys, so we shouldn't worry about those guys. I mean, what we worry about is what we have going on in-house. That's the most important thing, cross the board. I mean, I don't think any team really pays attention to that. I mean, when we go to scout and we look at different people in terms of who we're going to play, but, you know, when we're out on the field and we're focused and we're as a team, we pay attention to the guys we have in the locker room.
Exactly. You know, and the game film, yeah, I can see that being the exception to the rule, because then it's relevant to you and you're getting ready for a game, and, you know, that's when it's, you know, directly about you guys at that point. But as far as it goes with football also, I couldn't let this go tonight with also addressing this. I want to say I think you've been very forthright in making some points here and very principled with the situation at your alma mater with Coach Rodriguez there and everything that's happening. Clearly this is going to be, I think everybody understands, a make or break type situation. It was very interesting when he was hired there. I had a question that was kind of in passing, but that question seems to get to the forefront more and more every day. I thought it was a home run hire as far as his ability. I wondered about the fit with an old school type program like Michigan, the whole Michigan man type deal. There's increasing questions coming to the fore about that, you know, as well as the one lost record on the field. So going into this year with some of the thoughts that you've already expressed, what are your thoughts on the state of Michigan football right now?
I mean, I think Michigan is at a state of dire need, and if he doesn't execute this year, I think he'll be fired. I mean, it's a definite situation that a lot of people are looking at, and a lot of people are really being, the University of Michigan is being scrutinized right now, and I don't think we're used to being scrutinized for people to find out exactly why we're doing such great things. And now we're being scrutinized because we're not doing great things at all. And I think there's a certain level of frustration that is arising within a lot of people. And, you know, fact, first year he was there, he was the losingest coach ever in Michigan history. Second year, second losingest coach in Michigan history. And so this is his third year. And, you know, there definitely needs to be a change. And I think as an alumni, I want change. As a player, I definitely want change. And as a student, I need change because I want to be at a school with the winningest tradition as Michigan has always upheld. And, you know, whether or not people feel as though he was a great hire, right now he's not fitting the traditions that Michigan has set forth and put out there for so long. So if he can't accomplish something like that, then someone else needs to come in and step up and do the job.
To an extent, I'm just curious about this, the strong break that there was with the lineage, going beyond the fact that he wasn't a quote-unquote Michigan man, but just very clearly instituted from day one a different way of doing things. And I'm not even just talking about the schematics and the way that he likes to run the offense and the innovative things he was bringing, but just institutionally a different type of era. You know, Bo and Lloyd, that was then, this is now. Is that something where that has just sort of piled on to the whole one-loss type thing here, too, that if there was more of a go-along, get-along, open-arms type attitude, it might have helped with this? Or with that kind of a one-loss record, would it not have mattered anyways?
with this type of win-loss record and not doing so well. I mean, kind of just stands as a difficult situation for the University of Michigan. But, you know, in the future, much like anything else, we hope everything becomes a lot better and things turn around. But right now, you know, what I'm focused on, you know, is I hope that Michigan continues that winning tradition, and I know that the Bengals will continue their winning tradition, and Dehani Tackles the Globe continues to be successful on the air.
Well, very well said. You know what? I was just about to bring it around to the plugs, Dehani. I wanted to make sure, you know, that we talked about everything we needed to. Plus, you know, there's your ongoing work that you're doing with some of your artistic pursuits. I want to say, and I'm glad I get a chance to thank you on the air for that great Christmas card that you sent us here at the station, the wonderful picture that was taken in there. So I want to talk about that as well and give you a chance to plug, because we haven't really talked about that as much yet. Whether it be that, whether it be the TV show, anything going on with the Bengals, anything we didn't hit sufficiently yet, you take it away.
Well, I hope everybody check me out on Twitter, you know, just Dehani Jones. You can follow me. That'd be fantastic. You know, just learn a little bit about my ongoing efforts during the day and what actually goes on. And then also DehaniJones.com. Look out for new photographs being shown on iconoclasseditions.com. And as Five Star Ties begins to grow and Bowties for Cause establishes itself in the community, I hope people will reach out and understand that, you know, it's important to not only be a person, but be a person that is for a purpose and stands up for a cause. So I appreciate that.
Well, definitely, definitely. And, you know, and again, you know, I can personally attest, you know, on the photography and the art. I can't believe that card is still in such good shape for as many people as I've showed it to yet. Said, look at what we got. So I can't thank you enough for that. And, Dehani, you know, we try to be the show that embodies the phrase nothing is off topic. And I love there are so many different things we can talk about with you. It was a pleasure tonight as it was last summer. And the next time you get a hole in your schedule, sir, we'd definitely love to do it again.
All right, I appreciate that, and thanks very much for having me on.
Thank you so much. It's our pleasure, Dehani. Thank you. Dehani Jones, everybody, the one and only, joining us here on the FDH Lounge. Star linebacker for the Cincinnati Bengals, star of the TV show Dehani Tackles the Globe on the Travel Channel. There is only one Dehani Jones, make no mistake about that. What a pleasure to have him back on as it was the previous time, and I want to thank his management team as well from having been in contact with them. And you know, just a truly professional operation behind Dehani, as well as he himself. Just, you know, a class thing all the way around. And he's a very class individual, and he handles, I think, even difficult questions very well. You know, it's not easy to get into the whole can of worms about Michigan and some of the comments he's made about Coach Rich Rod, but, you know, he handled it with great aplomb, and I knew that he would. I wouldn't have gone there if I figured it was going to be ripping off a scab or anything like that, but I wanted to give him a chance to express himself just, you know, as wonderfully as he does on stuff. And he's a bottom-line guy, and I understand that. I understand demanding things of an organization and expecting nothing less. And I mean, that's how I am. I mean, I consider myself a fan in exile, say, of the Cleveland Indians, you know, as long as they're going to run their crappy organization the way that they do and not give a rat's ass about the fans. So I can understand that. You have to have accountability when you're invested in something, and you know, when the other side isn't holding up their side of the bargain, it's one thing to say, okay, all right, I'm going to stand back until you people get serious and start doing things the right way. And he's clearly gotten to that point with the Michigan program. They better turn this thing around. They better turn this thing around fast. And as a lifelong Ohioan, my father is an Ohio State alum. You know, I was born and bred to loathe all things maize and gold, but I understand where he's coming from, and it's a proud program. You know, I'm not a Michigan fan by any stretch of the imagination, but I respect what they have accomplished, as I do with any comparable program like that. You can't be a fan and not have respect for what they've done, and I think he is entirely correct to demand that those historic standards be upheld. So I definitely wanted to hit that, as well as the other things that we tackled with him the last time, the TV show, the Bengals. He's just an amazing guy. Like I said, you can talk any number of things.